this week. Silver blasted above $24 and gold touched $1,400. Welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. I'm your host, Chris Waltzak. Well, in this August 23rd show, we begin with the Market Weatherman Report, including the latest news impacting your investment portfolio. Next, three guests join me with their market outlook. Sprott Assets' John Embry says that the precious metals rebound will send prices back to the highs and beyond. Although he's wildly bullish on gold, John Embry thinks that silver will eclipse the $100 per ounce level. That's nearly a 400% return from current levels. Next, Gata.org's Bill Murphy is equally bullish on the metals prospects, but he likes the precious metals shares as a rebound play, many of which are at least 50% lower than last year. Louis Navalier is also bullish on the sector. He offers his outlook on the economy and the equities markets and continues to look for spectacular gains across the board for the remainder of this year. Then Robert Ian wraps up the show with another must-hear report. If you haven't yet signed up for the Alpha Stocks newsletter, the model portfolio continues to outperform the market. Plus, we now offer at least one daily stock candidate based on technicals, fundamentals, and market momentum. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the Market Weatherman Report. Visibility was virtually unlimited over the precious metals exchanges this week. Investors added gold and silver to portfolios on news of robust global demand for the metals, due in part to a global economic resurgence. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, gold flew higher by about $20, finishing the trading session near $1,400 an ounce. Silver outperformed the yellow metal yet again, adding about a dollar, up about 4% for the week and ending at $24.08. Silver backwardation continued this week on the NYMEX, beginning with the September 2013 contract and ending with the March 2015 contract. Silver is now higher by roughly 33% from the reaction low of a couple of months ago near $18.23, about $6 higher. Gold is higher by about 10% from the summer low of $12.73 an ounce and no longer backdated on the NYMEX. Meanwhile, gold leaped to a new three-month high, briefly eclipsing $1,400 an ounce this week on news that sales of new U.S. homes disappointed expectations, increasing the odds that the Federal Reserve may not taper economic stimulus later in the year. According to government data, new home sales dropped sharply in July, 13.4% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of about 400,000 in July. That's the lowest rate since October, according to the government data released on Friday, and the biggest decline in over 3 years. Sluggish home sales stoked the flames of speculation that the Federal Reserve may delay tapering monetary stimulus in order to revive domestic housing, a key component of economic output. One media source claims that gold shorts remain very high, and this implies that a squeeze could be unfolding as formerly bearish investors dash to cover short positions. In related news, although the Fed meeting minutes indicated that the governors feel confident that an economic recovery is going well, the sluggish housing figures may change their outlook by the time of the next FOMC meeting slated in about 1 month. Dr. Bernanke and leading economists will meet in Jackson Hole, Wyoming to discuss the national economic outlook. The Fed chairman Bernanke has oftentimes used the conference as a pulpit to indicate key economic policy changes such as the QE efforts. So his comments will likely be watched closely by investors next week. In global gold news, demand remains red hot, particularly for jewelry, bars, and coins in Asian countries. The World Gold Council expects 2 million pounds of gold purchases this year in both China and India, the world's two biggest buyers. In fact, global demand is outpacing supply for the second year running, due in no small part to worker unrest in South Africa, the world's biggest gold producer. Moreover, in China, consumers purchase an average of 4 metric tons a day. Net imports into China more than doubled to almost 500 metric tons from a year ago. That's according to Bloomberg's Hong Kong customs data. Gold consumption in China leaped over 50%. That's about 706 tons in just the first 6 months, according to the China Gold Gold Association. One report showed per capita gold holdings in China are one quarter that of developed nations, and this suggests there exists an untapped pull of demand for gold in China. Plus, the Bank of China stockpile of U.S. dollars remains very high in the trillions. Analysts expect the trend of divesting dollar reserves in favor of tangible assets like gold will persist for years to come, propping up gold price and putting downward pressure on the greenback. Moreover, the Shanghai Gold Exchange benchmark spot contract rocketed to the highest level in weeks. Volume for the 99.99% pure bars leaped to the highest point as well. Premiums remain above the average, around $16 per ounce, over the London spot price, suggesting solid physical demand. In a related story, Chinese mergers and acquisitions are accelerating. Gold mining companies set a new record in acquisitions. Takeovers and asset purchases increased to a record $2.2 billion, topping last year's record of less than $2 billion. The recent price plunge has made many gold and silver miners discounted buying opportunities. Bottom line on precious metals. Well, even market pundit Dennis Gartman announced this week he's buying gold. That fact is likely to catch the attention of mainstream investors, many of whom are flush with cash from the explosive equities market rally of 2013. Plus, we are now approaching a seasonally favorable period where holiday purchases tend to boost demand, including the Indian festival of Diwali, that five-day Hindu festival of lights that begins in November, as well as Christmas and Hanukkah in the West. For the rest of my gold forecast and targets, plus all of next week's stock candidates, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, following 2.5 weeks of selling, the bulls regained control of the equities markets this week. Positive comments from the FOMC meeting minutes convinced investors that the recovery could still be on track. By Friday's closing bell on the New York Stock Exchange, the Dow Jones Industrials gave back 70 points, less than 0.5%, finishing above the psychologically important 1500 level. The S&P 500 added about 8 points, picking up about 0.5%, finishing at 1663, while the Nasdaq fared once again the best, adding over 1.5% for the week, up 55, ending at 3657. The top story affecting the markets was a black swan-like event. Faulty connections between the U.S. Stock Exchange brought half of the market trading to a halt. Twice this week, U.S. trading was interrupted, reportedly due to computer malfunctions. The NYSE Arca Exchange and data processing at the Nasdaq were involved. The Nasdaq halted thousands of stocks, resulting with a complete closure during the trading session for 3 hours. Elsewhere, Transmontane Partners is a refined petroleum product terminaling and pipeline company based in Denver, Colorado, with operations throughout the country. The technical trend improved this week. Shares rebounded from support as I anticipated in the last report. In addition, according to DCF analysis, the stock is undervalued by about 100%. However, one proviso here, as I mentioned, this would not make my Alpha Stocks candidate list due to lackluster earnings. Still, the turnaround potential is high. Shares may rebound from the support level and suggesting a move to perhaps $80 in the future. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, despite the bullish moves this week, investor fear remains quite elevated, and this is viewed as a positive sign for next week's trading. Plus, the Labor Day holiday season is approaching, and this is typically a bullish time for the markets. For the rest of this report and all the forecasts, please log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account. Coming up, more GoldSeek.com radio with another guest trifecta. So we want you to stay with us here. Well, Bill Murphy is at the helm of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA, with Chris Powell, working on behalf of investors to expose the powers that be that are manipulating the precious metals market.
Great to be here, Chris. Thank you.
You know, so far in 2013, it hasn't been one of our best years, but the recent price rally is certainly very encouraging on news of economic recovery in China, the U.S., and the Eurozone. Gold gained nearly 5% last week, about 17% off the lows. J.P. Morgan analysts are noting that the bottom is in place and that investors should buy the bounce. Analysts at major gold seller Blanchard are also saying that during the recent pullback, demand actually increased. It never slowed. The company expects to see a rally above 1400 within a month and a close over 1500 this year. My guess is you'd say it's not going to take that long for us to see those highs.
Of course, I would agree. Gold and silver should never have been gone down to where they were in the first place. It was all orchestrated by the gold cartel, the bullion banks, the government, all that stuff that God has been highlighting all these years, and it's ridiculous. It's unleashed, as you said, torrent demand in China, and there's all sorts of things that are lining up to likely to set up price explosions this fall, not just go up.
Speaking of explosions, silver up 27% as of Friday from the lows set last month. But we haven't seen a one-month 27% move in the equities market probably since it opened back in the 1800s.
Silver dropping from 50 to 18 and plus was ludicrous. It was all orchestrated again, and I believe, and this is strictly conjecture on my part, that it was all done by J.P. Morgan, and part of what they did was buy up the silver market last year, hedged it with mega amounts in the over-the-counter and the COMEX market, and futures and puts were actually net mega short. There was reports of all sorts of physical tightness in the silver market last year, and yet when the price collapsed below 28, there's no reports of tightness. I think Morgan's been bombing the physical market with that supply. That's where it came from. And now, guess what? They've run out. I think that they're out, and silver's about ready to go berserk this fall.
Isn't that one of the neat things? When you can control a market and you have, you know, nearly perfect knowledge on its direction, a remarkably profitable affair for those few folks that have that inside information.
Well, look at, it just gets me. I don't know what's the matter with people when they don't understand how this gold and silver markets have been manipulated. J.P. Morgan is being investigated, 8-something separate investigations for rigging and manipulating markets. 8 by the Justice Department. But you mentioned gold and silver, people lose it. What? I can't understand when it comes to this particular subject.
Silver ETF holdings soared to a new all-time record this week. Over the last 6 weeks, about 1,400 tons of silver were added to the iShares Silver Trust, you know, coming off of the lows. Since silver suffered quite a bit here more than gold, I mean, we expect that because it's a more volatile market, it only seems to stand to reason that a rebound should be even more spectacular here.
Well, I think you're right, Chris, and I think it is going to be spectacular. If my theory is correct, and again, it's just conjecture, but I think you're going to see silver has traded differently the past 2 weeks. It's been very noticeable, not just because it went up, but just the way it's been trading. And I think that's going to continue all fall.
Exactly. I mean, take a look at, big demand, of course, with the surprisingly strong economic numbers in China. You would expect to see stronger demand for silver. Plus, you know, we're hearing reports that India now will no longer be curtailing its imports, and that being the number one importer of gold and silver. We have their big wedding festival season just around the corner, as well as other festivities. So a whole lot of factors coming into play. Making things very bullish for that metal. And, you know, but there are still some technical hurdles, and I know that you watch the charts for the precious metals to overcome. Do you agree that once silver clears that $30 resistance on the long term, and let's say gold over 15 to 1525, that we could be off to the races again?
Well, I use a little different numbers, but it's still the same thing. I think $24 is the key short term, and then once then the next big one would be a 35, but it's all the same. I still think silver is headed to well over $100 an ounce. I think it's completely sold out right now, and the move is going to surprise a lot of people.
Very good. Well, you know, friend of the show, Sprott Asset Manager John Embry recently announced that interest rate explosion could happen at any time. And I think we've already seen the opening salvos. And he's pointing to this mountain of interest rate sensitive derivatives. At last check, I noted about $250 trillion in interest rate sensitive derivatives. And that's just, I believe, in 4 of our leading domestic banks. They have a quarter of a quadrillion dollars.
No, it's mind-boggling. And, this was announced by Jamie Dimon himself, but J.P. Morgan, getting back to them, has a, quote, secret trading operation, I think it's in Boca Raton, Florida, where he said they trade 2 trillion derivatives a day. I mean, it's just staggering what's happened, and nobody knows what could happen in terms when interest rates take off, as they've been doing, in terms of some kind of black swan event that could just really unroil the markets.
Well, you know, according to Ghana.org, first we saw the European nations and then the late Hugo Chavez, Venezuela, demand the return of their gold, or repatriation, if you will, of their gold reserves. And now Asian countries, apparently, are demanding the return of gold as well. At some point, this could lead, you might say, to a tipping point where the pendulum swings back in favor of raging prices as demand shoots through the roof. Any comments?
People are beginning to understand what God has been talking about for 14 years or however long it's been. That is the gold really there? I mean, it's taking Germany 7 years to get 20% of their gold back. And we've suggested way back when we got this from James Turk that we swapped gold with the Germans and we sold their gold and it's to help suppress the price and it's no longer there. That's why the Germans can't get their gold back. And I think now with all the talk about unallocated accounts and this sort of thing, people are concerned about actually getting their gold. I mean, that's a whole different subject, but it's really starting to build. And as you say, it's beginning to reach a tipping point.
Well, speaking of tipping points, you know, our national debt here is staggeringly high. That could lead to a catastrophe at any moment. And I think that's what Mr. Embry was at least alluding to with his comments earlier in the week. Should investors be preparing for something on the horizon here?
Well, it's hard to really prepare in some ways. The answer is yes, but I mean, what's going to happen? I mean, even with gold and silver, if we get into a liquidity crunch, initially everything will be sold. What always happens. But the question is, and you could say, that said, I think gold and silver are going to go bonkers, and any sell-off would be extremely temporary. And, of course, the Chinese and the Indians and everybody else would say thank you very much and buy. And I still think I mentioned silver over 100, and gold's going to, I would think, 3,000 to 5,000 has been my target for a long time, go there. So in the bigger picture, that's how to prepare. But when it comes to the markets, it's going to be very difficult. And I suppose just be careful about margin positions, that's all.
I think that's a great point. And especially when we look at the premiums, during this sell-off, demand remained very robust. And interestingly, those premiums soared. I mean, we saw some of the largest premiums. Take a look at, let's say, the Shanghai Gold Exchange in relation to the London Exchange. This is indicative of a bullion market that isn't buying the paper story anymore because, as I've mentioned in the past few weeks here on the show, Mike Maloney showed that there's nine times the gold sales at the Shanghai Exchange relative to the COMEX, even though it's a tiny exchange. And this indicates that it's a more real exchange, and people who are demanding their gold, they want physical. They're shunning the paper market.
Well, that's true because, you know, the people over there know what's going on, and they've realized what they, I mean, honestly, they know what the gold cartel did. They know how cheap these prices are. They know they're artificial, and they want in. And that's what's setting up this explosive move. I think we're going to have this fall that's going to stun most people because they really don't understand the market. You don't get much information from the mainstream financial press. None of them report the real gold and silver stories. It's pathetic. But those, the people over there, do get it, and they're taking action on what they know.
You know, the action in the COT report has been, I think, very positive in recent months. In fact, we've seen one of the more bullish levels in years, and it appears that the commercials were covering their shorts down to virtually a neutral position. Some of the hedge funds and the speculators had closed out their positions, tossed in the towel.
Yeah, well, I have a little different take on that, Chris, in that I think some of the numbers are suspect in the sense of who is really doing some of the spec trading from offshore accounts, which you can't identify. And I know some of that is being a fact. I'm not just guessing on that one. But in general, to me, the big picture is the most important thing is the way silver has traded so differently, how gold, you know, is being bought, you know, by the Chinese. And I just think it's setting up something that's going to be dramatic. You know, this quantitative easing stuff, it's been totally bearish for gold and silver, which is completely counterintuitive. The Dow kept going up. Gold and silver crashed. Well, that was orchestrated. It was false. So now, no matter what they do, I think, you know, all this is the latent action from that quantitative easing and here and in Japan and all over the place is all kicking in. And the rest of the world knows this.
Is there anything on the radar screen that you think that maybe the mainline press or media just isn't picking up on right now that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, I'm prejudiced, as you well know. They're not picking on why gold and silver went down in the first place. Why don't they question how QE could be so good for the Dow and so bad for gold and silver? Nobody would have said that a year ago. And I think that's going to be the key to the market. They've set up a vacuum, especially in silver, that it's just going to go bonkers, and they'll come up with some other reason. But they almost never go to the real reason about these markets. It's pathetic.
It almost makes you think that it's not just the media, but investors and traders have also missed the important story here, because they're all looking at silver as primarily an industrial metal here, and they're picking up on the copper rebound as a reason to buy up silver. 12% moves on the upside could become the norm for a metal like silver as people wake up to the fact that it also has a monetary component. It's just been many decades since folks have adjusted their vantage point here on silver. I want to, give you a chance here to share any contact information with the listeners.
Oh, sure. If they want to check out my website, the Metropole Cafe, they can sign up for a 2-week free trial, see if it's of value. And, of course, I'm chairman of GATA, and then GATA.org. Chris Powell, my colleague, does a great job. I mean, he's going to be gearing up this fall to go to New Zealand, Taiwan, Australia, a couple other countries, a big GATA tour. So we're going to be busy this fall, and hopefully we're going to have a lot of fun doing it with gold and silver soaring. He's going to be on the move himself, but I'll be speaking at a few conferences.
Please keep us updated in the future on the markets.
Will do, Chris. Thank you.
My next guest thinks that the world might be on the precipice of an interest rate meltdown. Mr. John Embry is an industry expert in precious metals at Sprott Asset Management. He's studied the gold sector for several decades now. Welcome back, John Embry.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be back.
The president met with major U.S. government financial regulatory agencies this week, and the last time that happened, some financial fireworks. It's a bit euphemistic. Maybe even government losing control of the bond market and the unwinding of interest rate-sensitive derivatives. I wonder if you could tell us, please, more about this idea that the president's meeting could be signaling that the U.S. government is, well, maybe on track for some difficult times and maybe even our economy.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You alluded to the last time that Barack Obama had a meeting with some financial heads. And that, in that case, it was the heads of the 15 largest banking entities in the U.S. And within a day and a half, the gold price was smashed for over $200 in two trading sessions. I didn't think it related to that this time. I think that the issue now has to be the bond market. I mean, this rise in U.S. rates in the 10 years, it's almost doubled from the bottom now, the rates. And given sort of the leverage in the system, I mean, the one thing the system I don't believe can stand is, you know, much higher rates. And this is even amplified by the fact that there's a massive number of interest rate related derivatives in the world banking system, but particularly in a number of the too big to fail banks in the U.S. And when you have those, that kind of leverage that's imparted by derivatives, and you've got interest rates moving radically, some people are going to benefit by being, long or one side of the trade. The other people are going to be crushed on the other side of the trade. And I just think that this leads to a degree of a risk in the system, which I don't think is appreciated enough by a lot of people.
If we look at how our economy is hostage to rates, everything from mortgages, car loans, student loans, debt, credit cards, with about $1 trillion still outstanding, many folks saying the student loan debt is a time bomb. So just the hint of higher rates should be enough, I think, to put all Americans on edge.
Excellent point, but I think there's a lot of aspects to it. I mean, some people would say rates are higher because the economy's better. I dispute that. I don't think the economy's appreciably better. Other people say that the higher rates are a result of this conversation, constant conversation about the taper and the Fed sort of removing the punch bowl to some extent, not buying $85 billion worth of paper a month. But I think it may relate as much to the fact that the foreigners appear to have had it with U.S. debt. And for the last month, was they actually cashed $40 billion in, I think. And I think there's just insufficient buyers for the paper. And so I think that may be the main reason for the rate rise.
You know, there was a lot of speculation for several years that the Fed was artificially, even behind the scenes, working with banks such as JP Morgan to hold rates low by using extremely sophisticated derivatives such as credit default swaps, which gave them or lent them huge leverage, allowing them to hold rates low without the need for quite as much QE and related stimulus. Do you have any thoughts on that? And do you think that they're going to allow rates to move higher, or is this just out of their hands at this time?
My greatest fear is that, you know, they were able to buy 5 years after the onset of the first global financial crisis by their QE and by their interest rate manipulation. And I do believe that they were heavily, I mean, you can do an awful lot with derivatives, and that's why the derivative pool never shrank. In fact, it probably even grew. They just redefined, you know, what notional value was. And I think we may be, why I'm so concerned is I think we may be at the end of the rope, that they fired most of the bullets and now they're kind of out of ammo. And if that's the case and rates can't be controlled going forward, then I think we have a major problem on our hands, not just in the United States, globally.
The ECB, the Bank of England, Bank of Japan, and Bank of China, huge influence on the markets, especially in toto. They seem to, at least at their latest meetings, didn't really offer too much guidance that they were going to, you know, stop their stimulus ways and allow rates to move higher. I mean, and don't you think that it would take more than just the U.S. Fed to allow rates to move higher? I mean, it wouldn't take the coordinated efforts of our global central banks.
Well, I think that's true. Like, I mean, I'm of the camp that believes that nobody wants to induce the pain that is going to be attendant to severe austerity. Nobody wants to sort of trigger that. So consequently, we're going to see, they'll be saying one thing to try to, you know, make the public feel better. But they will create as much money as required to try to keep rates under control and to keep the financial system intact. My greatest concern, if that's the path they go down, and it would certainly appear to be the more likely one, is that ultimately this will lead in some sort of a currency destruction and possibly hyperinflation. And I mean, I have said many times, and I will say it one more time, I think the most corrosive thing that can happen to a society is to experience a hyperinflation. And I would rather see a debt deflation before something like that.
You know, it's so interesting you would say that, because I had way back in my undergraduate and some of my graduate classes, a professor who grew up in Europe during the great hyperinflation.
He experienced the Weimar in Germany.
He did experience Weimar. Of course, he was very young at the time, and he claimed there was another inflation that occurred after Weimar. And he said the main banks there in Europe are quite familiar with inflation, and it is their primary fear. The Federal Reserve's stated goal is to defend the dollar. And unfortunately, if we look at their track record over the last 100 years, I'm not sure that they should be patting themselves on the back here.
Well, I mean, they haven't lived up to that, man. However, I mean, I think the last thing I looked at, I mean, a U.S. dollar 100 years ago today would buy 2 cents or 1 cent worth of goods. So the idea that they were defending the value of the dollar is actually preposterous. But now they've got themselves in a bind that, I mean, it's either going to be the currency or the financial system. You can't do both.
The store of wealth, gold demand, according to media sources here, coins, bars, jewelry, leaped over 50%, over 1,000 tons, in the second quarter of this year. That's the most since 2008, you know, the last nadir, bull market reaction in 2008. It appears that consumers, well, they appreciate these discounted prices.
You know, it's interesting. It's a small group of consumers with passion that feel this way. I think the vast majority of people do not have any gold or silver in their portfolios, and I believe that that is a serious mistake. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell them they should have 50%. I think if they had 20%, for example, that would probably offer a significant amount of protection if some of my more worst scenarios came to pass. And the very fact that I think the average exposure to portfolios and all gold and silver exposure would be comfortably under 1%. Many times, and several times in the past, when gold and silver were necessary in portfolios, I mean, it got to 5 to 10%. And think about it. I mean, the amount of gold and silver isn't going to rise to any extent. So the only way that that could happen is by price. So to me, it would seem that it would be a very wise thing for people to have some gold and silver in their portfolios immediately. And if I'm correct, I suspect that this will be seen in retrospect as probably the single best buying opportunity in the whole bull market, which is now in its 13th year.
Less than 10% of Americans have any substantial investment in precious metals other than basic jewelry. And what I find interesting about this, if we look at the Census Bureau's numbers, 80% of Americans at some time grapple with unemployment or poverty. Half the country is either at the poverty level or approaching the poverty levels. Now, these are not pie-in-the-sky numbers. These are actual official numbers.
Yeah, I actually saw those numbers, Chris, and I was astounded at how bad they were.
With those types of numbers, you know, there certainly is lots of room for people to start thinking about some type of precious metals, and a quarter of Americans do not have one penny, not dollar, but penny in savings. Half of Americans have less than $800 in their savings. This is another official number. So I think that people are expecting the government to come to their aid. Did we learn nothing from Katrina? You know, from that disaster, their response, let's just say, was lackluster. And I certainly wouldn't want to find myself in a position where I was dependent on government assistance. Any comments?
That is an excellent comment. You know, I mean, I feel very badly for the public. Like, I think they've been misserved by their leaders. And I think a lot of the statistics you just quoted are absolutely correct, and the people have no savings. So, I mean, how can they buy gold and silver to protect themselves? They have nothing theoretically to protect. My greater thought is for those people who do have assets and do not have any gold and silver protection, I think they're making a mistake, because I think the governments are going to have to maintain the entitlement programs just to keep these other people from sort of becoming unruly. And in so doing, they're going to further debase the currency. So if you've got assets, you'd better protect them. And one good way to do it is owning some gold and silver and gold and silver shares.
It's another great point, because when we look at the government food-related programs, many people point to the $48 million on food stamps. But, you know, that's only half of the story, because there actually is over 100 million people on food assistance when we include school-related. We're looking at roughly 105, so you're talking more, once again, than one-third of the nation requiring food assistance. If these programs did not exist, we would see food lines and bread lines that would, frankly, astound those who lived through the Great Depression.
Well, I'm afraid you're right. And the fact is that there's not enough good jobs anymore. I mean, basically, North America, the Western world for that matter, farmed out the manufacturing job, shall we say, to China and other, you know, low-wage countries. And as a result, we've basically reduced high-paying jobs dramatically, and a lot of the jobs that are being created, as you know now, are part-time jobs. They don't pay much, and so a job isn't a job. Like, if you lose a manufacturing job, you're making $25 an hour or something, and you get a job at working at McDonald's or at Walmart or something, you're making a quarter or a third of that. It's totally different, and it's a huge problem to which, there, to me, there's no easy answer.
Shifting back to the precious metals markets, you know, the central banks have added 535 tons to reserves. That's last year, the most in nearly 50 years. There's talk from the World Gold Council that we're looking at 350 tons will be purchased this year. Hardly sounds like the activity one would expect during a bear market. If this was truly a bear market, they would be dishoarding their stockpile. Any comments?
It's not a bear market. I mean, it's been a bear market created by the paper gold people for the express purpose of keeping people away from gold. It isn't working because the primary central bank buyers are in the East, you know, India, Russia, China, et cetera, et cetera. And I believe that the vaults in the Western central banks, I think a lot of gold is being clandestinely leased and what have you. And this is a finite life, and there will be an explosion in price driven by physical shortages, and I think that's coming sooner rather than later.
No, I think you're right. We're starting to see signs of that. There's interesting developments in the futures contracts, backwardation.
Oh, that GOFO rate's, I think, very interesting, the rate over in London, that it's now more expensive to borrow gold than money, which it always used to be cost more to borrow money. And that just shows an enormous shortage, I think, of physical product available.
James Turk concurs with your sentiments. He actually mentioned on the show last week here, in his work, the only time he's seen a similar occurrence, well, the only two times, were back in 2000, where everyone remembers $250-odd gold, and then in 2008, where gold dipped down just temporarily before more than doubling, almost trebling, in price.
And more importantly, this time, Chris, it's gone on for over a month. Those previous two times, it just went on for several days. It suggests an ever even greater shortage. Now, I'm extremely enthusiastic about the gold price as we move into the fall season. I think summer's been relatively quiet because there's not a lot of people playing, so you can control the price more easily in the paper market. I think when everybody sort of gets back to work with the onset of fall, I think it could be an extremely good period for gold and silver, and most particularly the shares, which are undervalued.
That's a good point. And, you know, seasonally, we are entering a much more favorable period. You know, we have the Diwali Indian festival and wedding festival period coming up, if memory serves. We have, of course, Christmas and Hanukkah and related holidays here in the United States and around the world. India, you know, they have three tax duty increases.
They're absolutely panic-stricken about trying to restrict their citizens from buying gold. So, I mean, it's just led to massive amounts of smuggling and everything because it's almost in the Indian DNA. Gold's a great thing.
And the rupee, just in a free fall, it's terrified officials. And, of course, they cannot curtail energy, which is really their number one import, because, you know, that's the lifeblood, if you will, of the economy. So they, in turn, have decided to target gold. And as you say, I just read another report this afternoon that smuggling into India is enormous, which suggests that the official figures, import figures, may be bogus.
Well, I think they're understated. And one thing, even though they were trying to restrict gold for quite some time going into the country, silver exports exploded. I mean, the public wants, the people in the East, I think, have a greater appreciation of precious metals because they've seen their currencies kicked around more than we have over here. And as a result, I mean, you can't stop an idea whose time has come. And I think gold and silver's time has come.
Looking at about 130, 140 years since the last major currency crisis here in North America. Very few people remember the last currency crisis during the American Civil War. It was quite substantial here in the South. And if you talk to folks here, many still are holding on to Confederate dollars and bills, and they remember the stories of their family, which ultimately became worthless almost overnight. And even the North experienced substantial inflation, not hyperinflation, but substantial inflation. We just haven't seen anything like that here. And I think when a couple of generations, two or three generations pass, people seem to lose familiarity with it. And I think that may be why we're facing it now. Any thoughts?
Well, I think that's very well said. I think that the worst thing that could possibly happen to the United States, and I think it's a growing probability that it will, and that is that the U.S. dollar loses its reserve currency status, because I believe there's moves afoot amongst other countries, particularly China, to sort of underwrite that, basically. And, I mean, as some politician, called it an exorbitant privilege to have the reserve currency status. So if the U.S. were to lose that, I think it would have a very negative impact on their currency and, by extension, on their living standards.
No, I think it's well said. I mean, I think U.S. dollar is losing hegemony. And when we look at the ramifications, as you say, this is quite significant. We're seeing trade agreements between China, Iran, Russia, China, a mad rush, if you will, I think, to establish alternative reserve currency. I don't know if this is just hearsay, but I continue to read reports, maybe one every week or two, suggesting that China and Russia's official import numbers have been artificially suppressed. Both governments are hoarding huge stockpiles, as Mr. Putin is quite well known for his fear of the West. Of course, China appears to be preparing for an alternative reserve currency, perhaps even a gold-backed yuan.
Agree with you. You know, I was just making the comment at lunch with a person I was having lunch with that, you know, in a certain way, the Cold War is coming back, and it's more like, rather than a weapon-driven Cold War, it's more like a currency Cold War. And I think that the Chinese and the Russians in particular have a different agenda than the Americans do, and this could be very interesting because they're the ones that are accumulating all the gold, and it's leaving the West in droves. So it's going to be an interesting period coming up, and it could be very disruptive.
Any other topics that we've missed today?
As bullish as I am on gold, I think the opportunity for the greatest appreciation remains in silver. I think that the shortages of silver will become, particularly when gold gets more expensive and a lot of smaller buyers can't afford it, they will move to silver as their sort of precious metal of choice. It's a much smaller market, and a great deal of the new mine supply goes to industrial usage. So I think in that event, if gold were to double in price, I think silver could probably quadruple in that environment.
I think you're right, and I think that estimate may even be low if, for instance, a major corporation decides to stockpile silver, because I think as it becomes more of a strategic resource, industrial resource, you know, many of these wise corporations who have an army of analysts will start to warn their CEOs and CFOs that this is an absolutely essential resource. GE, GM, you know, any one of these companies, we've seen them corner palladium for catalytic converters and silver being, as you say, such a tight market. Let's say George Soros, John Paulson, Kyle Bass, or one of these large money managers says, you know, gold has a lot of room here to the upside. Let's increase our exposure to precious metals and diversify into some silver.
There's no question. I think that is absolutely in the cards. I mean, historically, the gold-silver ratio, which is currently just declined from about 67 to 1 to just around 60 to 1, has gotten as low as 15 to 1. So if you think that if we get into a real raging bull market for these two monetary metals, then I think there's a very good chance that that kind of ratio could come to the four, which would suggest four times as much appreciation in silver to get to that 15 to 1 ratio over the next few years. So, yeah, I'm really bullish in silver.
Would you like to share any contact information?
Yeah, basically, you can come to www.sprott.com, and there's a lot of really interesting information on our website. There's a lot of interesting guys in here with some good thoughts. So I would encourage people to do that.
Well, as always, thanks so much for taking time. I know that you are very busy today, but you made time for us, and it's appreciated.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Chris. Anytime.
Louis Navalier is editor of four leading stock advisory newsletters, and he is one of the few folks we've had on the show to regularly call the equities markets with surprising accuracy. It's a pleasure to welcome back Louis Navalier to GoldSeek.com Radio.
Honor to talk to you.
Well, you know, investors sold stocks last week on news that billionaire investor George Soros' largest position is an S&P put. The S&P fell 2.1% last week. But you point out that George Soros' fund has a put option. I think maybe folks made a bit too much out of the decline. I mean, given the magnitude of the advance in 2013 so far, care to comment?
Well, Mr. Soros likes to arbitrage. I'm not surprised that he might have increased his put. You know, if he's buying quality securities and there's what we call low-quality indexes, that's what arbitrage is all about. I really think that is grossly overblown. It's less than 5% of his portfolio. It's only 4% and change. It was 1% in the previous quarter. It's about tripled. I think the media just grabbed it because it was August is boring, and they wanted to get everybody excited. And prior to talking about Soros, they were talking about how this guy Mark Faber was bearish on things, and he writes a gloom doom report. And you know, whether it's right or wrong in the media business, whether it's nightly news or politics or investing, fear sells better than greed. And I just think Soros was the latest excuse to scare people in August when no one's paying attention.
And you also point out that higher bond yields will keep investors interested in the equities as essentially money flows away from bonds and looks for a better return in the equities market.
Absolutely. You know, bond yields have almost doubled since May 1st. I went from 1.66 to 2.8 and rising. They're closing on 3%, and that's a tremendous loss. And fixed income investors are freaked. I mean, they're not used to this kind of volatility. Some big blue chip stocks have a higher yield, tax advantage yield, and they might want to try those out. So, then, you know, they buy a Clorox, Kimberly-Clark, Johnson & Johnson. They'll probably get a higher yield and better performance.
You also note that corporate earnings in the third quarter are higher than expected, or at least we've had a higher than normal number of firms reporting good earnings guidance. So the market will likely continue climbing for the rest of the year, you know, as folks look for better returns than certificate of deposits and at their local savings account, that market dividends are looking quite attractive these days.
Sure. I think once you start that ball rolling, the money pours in. So money's pouring out of bond funds now. We expect it to pour into stock funds. Initially, when over $60 billion fled bonds in July, most of it went to money market, but we're getting evidence now it's starting to come back in. So really, June, July, there's been significant outflows. I apologize. I think it was $60 billion in June left and $40 billion left in July. But of that $100 billion that's left, at least $20 billion's gone in the stocks here recently. So that's a good sign. So there's still a lot of cash on the sidelines. I think as the confidence in the market goes up, I think that more money will tiptoe back in the market.
Crude oil recently climbed to a two-month high, due in part to the unrest in Egypt. Higher energy prices sometimes can put pressure on economic growth. And the question, are you factoring this into your equities outlook?
Not so much. I think long-term what's happening is bullish. I like selected pipeline companies, not all, and I like some of the refiners that are exporting a lot of their product. Like, basically, when you refine a barrel of oil, you get a lot of diesel whether you want it or not, and they don't do all their diesel, so a lot of them are exporting it. Our energy exports are literally running almost $100 billion a month right now, and that's double where they were a year ago. So I like selected refiners and selected pipelines, but there is still an energy glut. These higher prices might help their margins near term. We need more pipelines in North America. There was that horrible accident in Quebec where 50 people died when the train overturned in town when everybody was sleeping. So, the pipeline business is should get bigger and bigger. It's just silly to transport oil on trains when you put a pipeline in. So I think this is going to help our trade deficit. It already is. It's already boosting GDP growth. It did in the second quarter. And, they're going to revise second quarter GDP up to almost 2.5%. So it's a blessing for North America. And now Mexico's starting to frack. That's a good sign. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Very good. Well, the Commerce Department announced last week that retail sales are climbing here. So the consumer apparently is a little more comfortable making purchases, and that tends to affect corporate profits as, we see increased sales, bottom lines tend to improve. In your view, how big of a positive factor is this for the markets?
It's very positive, but it's also very confusing. You've had mixed results from Walmart, but you just had stunning reports from Home Depot and Lowe's. But what's interesting is when you dig in the Commerce Department report on retail sales, they say that home improvement sales are down. Yet how did Lowe's and Home Depot have record results? You know, Home Depot's same-store sales were up 10.7% in the second quarter. So I'm not sure what the government is reading, but I don't think they're reading the right stuff, okay? And I think the retail sales are a lot stronger than they give them credit for. We're going to continue to be driven by consumer spending. I think it's a lot better than we think. They've also been reporting that spending in bars and restaurants has been down. That's always a worm sign if people are out and about drinking, but I just don't think that's the case.
I'd also like your take on the 5-year low in unemployment. The Labor Department revealed that we have dropped to about 7.4% on national unemployment rate. Of course, that's a bit above, still above their 6.5% target. And my guess is then you'd expect the Fed to get its number, a bit more hawkish tone at the Fed.
Yeah, the job market's a lagging indicator. We were all disappointed with the July payroll, but the ADP report was a lot better. I guess the biggest problem in the job market is when people get work, too much of it's temp. And then there's the core of the labor market between 25 and 54. Those people seem to be struggling. If you're above 55 and older, you got more work than ever. Women 2024 seem to be able to find work pretty easily. But that core between 25 and 54 is still struggling. It's just, whether it's right or wrong, if you get a temp job, they think you're fully employed. So I'm not here to bash the health care and the 30-hour week. If you keep people under 30 hours, you don't have to give them health care and stuff. But there's something funny going on. There's a lot of slack in the workforce. But it is slowly but surely mending itself, and optimism is rising. So there's hope. It's just unfortunate it took so long to recover this time.
And I know that you're also watching the changing of the guard at the Fed, the upcoming changing of the guard at the Fed, with Chairman there, Ben Bernanke, expected to, his tenure to end in 2014. And then his two replacements, Fed Governor Janet Yellen, as well as Professor Larry Summers, from previous discussions, you've mentioned that they are both on the dovish side, and we could see continued QE at the Fed.
Yeah, both are more dovish than Ben Bernanke. Obviously, President Obama wants Larry Summers. He leaked his name. The White House leaked his name. He's trying to get all opposition out of the way. Larry Summers is a very controversial fellow. He was president of Harvard at one time, and while he was head of Harvard, he said that women weren't good at math, which isn't the best thing to say when you hit an academic institution. He's known as a partisan hack. Insulted a lot of people. I think if he becomes Fed chairman, the dollar weakens and the position becomes politicized. I think Janet Yellen would be better. She is a dove. She's from San Francisco Fed, but at least San Francisco Fed's starting to question quantitative easing and the wisdom of it. So, because they're noticing it's not fixing things like they wanted to. So I think Janet Yellen's a better forecaster. She's more open-minded. I think she's more credible. While Larry Summers is a partisan hack. Now, that doesn't mean he won't become Fed chairman. I don't like Jacob Blue, our Treasury Secretary. He's known as a partisan hack. You know, our deficits don't rise anymore under Jacob Blue. It's funny, in July we had a deficit, but the deficit, federal debt, didn't rise. So we'll see. We might have a very weak dollar with Blue and Larry Summers.
Very good. And in that event, then I guess you would certainly like a rebound, or be looking for a rebound, in the precious metals and commodities equity sector.
Sure. When the market gets hit, the gold's starting to firm up. And when the dollar gets weak, it'll help gold, silver, copper. In fact, copper's already made a turn. So there's hope.
You know, the housing market, a vital component to economic health. We have seen housing starts pull back a bit here, at least not with that momentum we saw earlier in the year. And the Philadelphia Housing Index is also. Are you looking for some more sluggishness in the REIT sector? And since housing is such an important component of our economic, at least domestic economic growth, how could this affect forecasts moving forward?
I think the housing market's fine. I think it's a lot of our growth near term has been multifamily. I think when interest rates go up, people scramble to refinance and maybe buy a home. The average inventory is barely 4 months out there of new homes. The only problem is that every housing market has a line. If you're below the line, you're good. If you're above the line, you're soft. Like I know in Reno, Nevada, where I have a home, if it's above $2 million, if it's above $1 million, there's a 22-month inventory. But, you know, if you have a home for $250, it'll sell in a few days. So I think it's going to be okay. I think it's the housing market slowly but surely repairing itself. I think, you know, even though they're bashing home builders and they're at a new low for the year, I think it's a gross overreaction. The bottom line is housing starts are strong, building permits are strong, home builder confidence is good.
Anything else on your economic radar that you're watching closely that you think listeners would find interesting here?
Well, again, they're going to revise second quarter GDP up from 1.7 to about 2.5. Third quarter GDP is screaming based on the ISM service and manufacturing numbers. We're going to finish this year very, very strong. It's been a good year so far. And I think you're going to have a very strong year in rally. So that's the main message I'd have. The only problem is the market goes higher, it does get more narrow. And so I would advise people to get a portfolio checkup. If they like a free portfolio checkup, they just go to NavalierGrowth.com, click on Portfolio Grader. My entire database of 5,000 stocks is online, available to you free. You can key in your stocks. You can save them on the server. And it gets updated every week automatically. So I would recommend a portfolio checkup at this time.
Excellent. Louis Navalier, thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule with us.
Thank you.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. It has recently come to light that the Department of Health and Human Services will spend $224 million in grants to pay for home inspection programs as part of national health care. State agencies throughout the country will be funded and authorized to send government inspectors to your house if a home visit is deemed appropriate, to create what is being called social and physical environments that promote good health for all. These forced home inspections are being packaged and sold to us to help at-risk children. I mean, who could be against that? Currently, an at-risk child is defined as one who lives with a family that includes people who have served in the armed forces, pregnant women under the age of 21, regardless of their marital status, users of tobacco products, children with low student achievement, and numerous other categories. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius calls these home visits a good investment. She says home visiting programs play a critical role in the nation's efforts to help children get off to a strong start. She says parenting is a tough job, and helping parents succeed pays big dividends in a child's well-being and healthy environment. It all sounds so innocent, but what exactly is going to be inspected? Are they going to take an inventory of the food you buy? Are they going to ask you and your spouse about intimate details? Are they going to ask about whether or not you have a gun and then demand to inspect it? Are they going to ask if you have monetary instruments at home, like cash or, God forbid, gold and silver? Are they going to demand to inspect those as well? And what happens to you and your children if you fail to meet the, as of yet, undefined government guidelines? Are you going to be taxed? Are you going to be required to attend special domestic sensitivity training? Are your children going to be taken away because you have too much junk food at home? Or could you even lose your freedom? This is the proverbial slippery slope. And I'm afraid compliance by the masses will be easier than one would hopefully want to believe. Why? Because with more and more people dependent on a socialized federal government, in order to keep that government support coming, compliance will be mandatory. Eventually, that compliance will be invisibly woven into the fabric of most people's daily lives, and as commonplace as brushing their teeth. Incremental compliance leads to totalitarian control. As Yuli Maurer defense minister and member of the Swiss Federal Council says, you can lose wealth and you can regain it, but you can lose freedom only once. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter @ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.